write it. That wasn't exactly an answer. I repeated. Where did the blight come from?
Those milky eyes narrowed. The High Lord does not know that you came here today, does he? Does not know that his human woman came to trap Asuriel because he cannot give her the answers she seeks. But it is too late, human, for the High Lord, for you, perhaps for your realm as well.
Despite all that it had said, despite its order to stop asking questions and stay with Tamlin, it was his human woman that echoed in my head, that made me clench my teeth. But the Suriel went on.
Across the violent western sea, there is another fairy kingdom called Highburn, ruled by a wicked, powerful king. Yes, a king, he said when I raised a brow. Not a High Lord. There his territory is not divided into courts. There he is law unto himself. Humans no longer exist in that realm, though his throne is made of their bones.
That large island I'd seen on the map, the one that hadn't yielded any lands to humans after the treaty, and a throne of bones. The cheese I'd eaten turned leaden in my stomach.
For some time now, the king of Highburn has found himself unhappy with the treaty the other ruling High Fae of the world made with you humans long ago. He resents that he was forced to sign it, to let his mortal slaves go, and to remain confined to his damp green isle at the edge of the world. And so, 100 years ago, he dispatched his most trusted and loyal commanders, his deadliest warriors, remnants of the ancient armies that he once sailed to the continent to wage such a brutal war against you humans, all of them as hungry and vile as he. As spies and courtiers and lovers, they infiltrated the various High Fae courts and kingdoms and empires around the world for 50 years, and when they had gathered enough information, he made his plan. But nearly 5 decades ago, one of his commanders disobeyed him. The deceiver. And
the Suriel straightened.
We are not alone.
I drew my bow farther, but kept it pointed at the ground as I scanned the trees. But everything had already gone silent in the presence of the Suriel.
Human, you must free me and run, it said,
those death-filled eyes widening.
Run for the High Lord's manor. Do not forget what I told you. Stay with the High Lord and live to see everything righted.
What is it? If I knew what came, I could stand a better chance of
the Naga. Fairies made of shadow and hate and rot. They heard my scream and they smelled you. Free me, human. They will cage me if they catch me here. Free me and return to the High Lord's side.
Shit. Shit. I lunged for the snare, making to put away my bow and grab my knife. But 4 shadowy figures slipped through the birch trees, so dark that they seemed made from a starless night. Chapter 15. The Naga were sprung from a nightmare. Covered in dark scales and nothing more, they were a horrendous combination of serpentine features and male humanoid bodies, whose powerful arms ended in polished black, flesh-shredding talons. Here were the creatures of the blood-filled legends, the ones that slipped through the wall to torment and slaughter mortals, the ones I would have been glad to kill that day in the snowy woods. Their huge, almond-shaped eyes greedily took in the Suriel and me. The 4 of them paused across the clearing, the Suriel between us, and I trained my arrow toward the one in the center. The creature smiled, a row of razor-sharp teeth greeting me as a silvery forked tongue darted out.
"The Dark Mother has sent us a gift today, brothers," he said,
gazing at the Suriel, who was clawing at the snare now. The Naga's amber eyes shifted toward me again.
"And a meal."
"Not much to eat," another one said, flexing its claws. I began backing away, toward the stream, toward the manor below, keeping my arrow pointed at them.
One scream from me would notify Lucian, but my breath was thin. And he might not come at all if he'd sent me here. I kept every sense fixed on my retreating steps.
"Human," the Suriel begged.
I had 10 arrows. 9 once I fired the one knocked in my bow. None of them ash, but maybe they'd keep the Naga down long enough for me to flee.
I backed away another step. The 4 Naga crept closer, as if savoring the slowness of the hunt, as if they already knew how I tasted.
I had 3 heartbeats to make up my mind, 3 heartbeats to execute my plan. I drew my bowstring back farther, my arm trembling. And then I screamed, sharp and loud, and with every bit of air in my 2 tight lungs. With the Naga now focused entirely on me, I fired at the tether holding the Suriel in place. The snare shattered. Like a shadow on the wind, the Suriel was off, a blast of dark that set the 4 Naga staggering back.
The one closest to me surged toward the Suriel, the strong column of its scaly neck stretching out. No chance of my movements being considered an unprovoked attack anymore, not now that they'd seen my aim. They still wanted to kill me. So I let my arrow fly. The tip glittered like a shooting star through the gloom of the forest. I had all of a blink before it struck home and blood sprayed. The Naga toppled back just as the remaining 3 whirled to me. I didn't know if it was a killing shot. I was already gone. I raced for the stream, using the path I'd calculated earlier, not daring to look back. Lucian had said he'd be nearby, but I was deep in the woods, too far from the manor and help. Branches and twigs snapped behind me, too close, and snarls that sounded like nothing I'd heard from Tamlin or Lucian or the wolf or any animal filled the still woods. My only hope of getting away alive lay in outrunning them long enough to reach Lucian, and then only if he was there as he'd promised to be. I didn't let myself think of all the hills I would have to climb once I cleared the forest itself, or what I would do if Lucian had changed his mind. The crashing through the brush became louder, closer, and I veered to the right, leaping over the stream. Running water might have stopped the Suriel, but a hiss and a thud close behind me told me it did nothing to hold the Naga at bay. I careened through a thicket, and thorns ripped at my cheeks. I barely felt their stinging kisses or the warm blood sliding down my face. I didn't even have time to wince, not as 2 dark figures flanked me, closing in to cut me off. My knees groaned as I pushed myself harder, focusing on the growing brightness of the wood's end. But the Naga to my right rushed at me so fast that I could only leap aside to avoid the slashing talons. I stumbled but stayed upright, just as the Naga on my left pounced. I hurled myself into a stop, swinging my bow up in a wide arc. I nearly lost my grip as it connected with that serpentine face, and bone crunched with a horrific screech. I hurtled over his enormous fallen body, not pausing to look for the others. I made it 3 feet before the 3rd Naga stepped in front of me. I swung my bow at his head. He dodged it. The other 2 hissed as they came up behind me, and I gripped the bow harder. Surrounded. I turned in a slow circle, bow ready to strike. One of them sniffed at me, those slitted nostrils flaring. "Scrawny human thing," he spat to the others, whose smiles grew sharper.
Do you know what you've cost us?
I wouldn't go down without a fight, without taking some of them with me. Go to hell, I said, but it came out in a gasp. They laughed, stepping nearer. I swung the bow at the closest. He dodged it, chuckling.
We'll have our sport, though you might not find it as amusing.
I gritted my teeth as I swung again. I would not be hunted down like a deer among wolves. I would find a way out of this. I would. A black clawed hand closed around the shaft of my bow, and a resounding snap echoed through the two silent woods. The air left my chest in a whoosh, and I only had time to half turn before one of them grabbed me by the throat and hurled me to the ground. He pounded my arm so hard against the earth that my bones groaned and my fingers splayed, dropping the remnants of my bow.
When we're done ripping off your skin, you'll wish you hadn't crossed into Prithian,
he breathed into my face, the reek of carrion shoving down my throat. I gagged.
We'll cut you up so fine there won't be much for the crows to pick at.
A white-hot flame went through me. Rage or terror or wild instinct, I didn't know. I didn't think. I grabbed the knife in my boot and slammed it into his leathery neck. Blood rained down onto my face, into my mouth, as I bellowed my fury, my terror. The Naga slumped back. I scrambled up before the remaining two could pin me, but something rock hard hit my face. I tasted blood and soil and grass as I hit the earth. Stars danced in my vision, and I stumbled to my feet again out of instinct, grabbing for Lucian's hunting knife. Not like this. Not like this. Not like this. One of them lunged for me, and I dodged aside. His talons caught in my cloak and yanked, ripping it into ribbons just as his companion threw me to the ground, my arms tearing beneath those claws.
You'll bleed,
one of them panted, laughing under his breath at the knife I lifted.
We'll bleed you nice and slow.
He wiggled his talons, perfect for deep, brutal cutting. He opened his mouth again, and a bone-shattering roar sounded through the clearing. Only it hadn't come from the creature's throat. The noise hadn't finished echoing before the Naga went flying off me, crashing into a tree so hard that the wood cracked. I made out the gleaming gold of his mask and hair and the long deadly claws before Tamlin tore into the creature. The Naga holding me shrieked and released his grip, leaping to his feet as Tamlin's claws shredded through his companion's neck. Flesh and blood ripped away. I kept low to the ground, knife at the ready, waiting. Tamlin let out another roar that made the marrow of my bones go cold and revealed those lengthened canines. The remaining creature darted for the woods. He got only a few steps away before Tamlin tackled him, pinning him to the earth, and disemboweled the Naga in one deep, long swipe. I remained where I lay, my face half buried in leaves and twigs and moss. I didn't try to raise myself. I was shaking so badly that I thought I would fall apart at the seams. It was all I could do to keep holding the knife. Tamlin got to his feet, wrenching his claws out of the creature's abdomen. Blood and gore dripped from them, staining the deep green moss. High Lord, High Lord, High Lord. Feral rage still smoldered in his gaze, and I flinched as he knelt beside me. He reached for me again, but I jerked back, away from the bloody claws that were still out. I raised myself into a sitting position before the shaking resumed. I knew I couldn't get to my feet.
Feyre, he said.
The wrath faded from his eyes, and the claws slipped back under his skin, but the roar still sounded in my ears. There had been nothing in that sound but primal fury.
How?
It was all I could manage to say, but he understood me.
I was tracking a pack of them. These four escaped and must have followed your scent through the woods. I heard you scream.
So he didn't know about the Suriel, and he'd come to help me. He reached a hand toward me, and I shuddered as he ran cool, wet fingers down my stinging, aching cheek. Blood. That was blood on them. And from the stickiness on my face, I knew there was already enough blood splattered on me that it wouldn't make a difference. The pain in my face and my arm faded, then vanished. His eyes darkened a bit at the bruise I knew was already blossoming on my cheekbone, but the throbbing quickly lessened. The metallic scent of magic wrapped around me, then floated away on a light breeze.
I found one dead half a mile away, he went on, his hands leaving my face as he unbuckled his baldric,
then shucked off his tunic and handed it to me. The front of my own had been ripped and torn by the talons of the Naga.
I saw one of my arrows in his throat, so I followed their tracks here.
I pulled on Tamlin's tunic over my own, ignoring how easily I could see the cut of his muscles beneath his white shirt and the way the blood soaking it made them stand out even more. A purebred predator, honed to kill without a second thought, without remorse. I shivered again and savored the warmth that leaked from the cloth. High Lord, I should have known, should have guessed. Maybe I hadn't wanted to. Maybe I'd been afraid.
Here, he said,
rising to his feet and offering me a bloodstained hand. I didn't dare look at the slaughtered Naga as I gripped his extended hand and he pulled me to my feet. My knees buckled, but I stayed upright. I stared at our linked hands, both coated in blood that wasn't our own. No. He hadn't been the only one to spill blood just now. And it wasn't just my blood that still coated my tongue. Perhaps that made me as much of a beast as him. But he'd saved me, killed for me. I spat onto the grass, wishing I hadn't lost my canteen.
Do I want to know what you were doing out here? He asked.
No. Definitely not. Not after he'd warned me plenty of times already. I thought I wasn't confined to the house and garden. I didn't realize I'd come so far. He dropped my hand.
On the days that I'm called away to deal with trouble, stay close to the house.
I nodded a bit numbly. Thank you, I mumbled. Fighting past the shaking racking my body, my mind. The Naga's blood on me became nearly unbearable. I spat again.
Not just for this. For saving my life, I mean. I wanted to tell him how much that meant, that the High Lord of the Spring Court thought I was worth saving, but couldn't find the words.
His fangs vanished.
It was the least I could do. They shouldn't have gotten this far onto my lands.
He shook his head, more at himself, his shoulders slumping.
Let's go home, he said, sparing me the effort of explaining why I'd been out here in the first place.
I couldn't bring myself to tell him that the manor wasn't my home, that I might not even have a home at all anymore. We walked back in silence, both of us blood-drenched and pale. I could still sense the carnage we'd left behind, the blood-soaked ground and trees,
the pieces of the Naga. Well, I'd learned something from the surreal, at least, even if it wasn't entirely what I wanted to hear or know.
Stay with the High Lord.
Fine, easy enough. But as for the history lesson it had been in the middle of giving me, about wicked kings and their commanders and however they tied into the High Lord at my side and the Blight, I still didn't have enough specifics to be able to thoroughly warn my family. But the Suriel had told me not to go looking for further answers. I had a feeling I would surely be a fool to ignore his advice. My family would have to make do with the bare bones of my knowledge then. Hopefully it would be enough. I didn't ask Tamlin anything more about the Naga, about how many he'd killed before those four slipped away. Didn't ask him anything at all, because I didn't detect a trace of triumph in him, but rather a deep, unending sort of shame and defeat. Chapter 16. After soaking in the bath for nearly an hour, I found myself sitting in a low-backed chair before my room's roaring fireplace, savoring the feel of Alice brushing out my damp hair. Though dinner was to be served soon, Alice had a cup of molten chocolate brought up and refused to do anything until I'd had a few sips. It was the best thing I'd ever tasted. I drank from the thick mug as she brushed my hair, nearly purring at the feel of her thin fingers along my scalp. But when the other maids had gone downstairs to help with the evening meal, I lowered my mug into my lap. If more fairies keep crossing the court borders and attacking, is there going to be a war? Maybe we should just take a stand. Maybe it's time to say enough, Lucian had said to Tamlin that first night. The brush stilled. Don't ask such questions, you'll call down bad luck. I twisted in my seat, glaring up into her masked face. Why aren't the other High Lords keeping their subjects in line? Why are these awful creatures allowed to roam wherever they want? Someone began telling me a story about a king in Highburn. Alice grabbed my shoulder and pivoted me around. It's none of your concern. Oh, I think it is. I turned around again, gripping the back of the wooden chair. If this spills into the human world, if there's war or this blight poisons our lands? I pushed back against the crushing panic. I had to warn my family, had to write to them. Soon. The less you know, the better. Let Lord Tamlin deal with it. He's the only one who can. The Suriel had said as much. Alice's brown eyes were hard, unforgiving. You think no one would tell me what you asked the kitchen to give you today, or realize what you went to trap? Foolish, stupid girl. Had the Suriel not been in a benevolent mood, you would have deserved the death it gave you. I don't know what's worse, this or your idiocy with the puka. Would you have done anything else? If you had a family, I do have a family. I looked her up and down. There was no ring on her finger. Alice noticed my stare and said, My sister and her mate were murdered nigh on 50 years ago, leaving 2 younglings behind. Everything I do, everything I work for is for those boys. So you don't get the right to give me that look and ask me if I would do anything different, girl.
Where are they? Do they live here? Perhaps that was why there were children's books in the study. Maybe those 2 small shining figures in the garden. Maybe that had been them.
No, they don't live here, she said too sharply. They are somewhere else, far away.
I considered what she said, then cocked my head. Do fairy children age differently? If their parents had been killed almost 50 years ago, they could hardly be boys. Ah, some age like you and can breed as often as rabbits. But there are kinds, like me, like the High Fae, who are rarely able to produce younglings. The ones who are born age quite a bit slower. We all had a shock when my sister conceived the second one only 5 years later, and the eldest won't even reach adulthood until he's 75. But they're so rare. All our young are, and more precious to us than jewels or gold.
She clenched her jaw tightly enough that I knew that was all I would likely get from her. I didn't mean to question your dedication to them, I said quietly. When she didn't reply, I added, I understand what you mean about doing everything for them. Alice's lips thinned, but she said,
The next time that fool Lucian gives you advice on how to trap the Suriel, you come to me. Dead chickens, my sagging ass. All you needed to do was offer it a new robe and it would have groveled at your feet.
By the time I entered the dining room, I'd stopped shaking, and some semblance of warmth had returned to my veins. High Lord of Prithian or no, I wouldn't cower, not after what I'd been through today. Lucian and Tamlin were already waiting for me at the table. Good evening, I said, moving to my usual seat. Lucian cocked his head in a silent inquiry, and I gave him a subtle nod as I sat.
His secret was still safe, though he deserved to be walloped for sending me so unprepared to the Suriel.
Lucian slouched a bit in his chair.
I heard you two had a rather exciting afternoon. I wish I could have been there to help.
A hidden, perhaps half-hearted apology, but I gave him another little nod. He said with forced lightness,
Well, you still look lovely, regardless of your hell-sent afternoon.
I snorted. I'd never looked lovely a day in my life. I thought fairies couldn't lie. Tamlin choked on his wine, but Lucian grinned, that scar stark and brutal.
Who told you that?
Everyone knows it, I said, piling food on my plate, even as I began wondering about everything they'd said to me so far, every statement I'd accepted as pure truth. Lucian leaned back in his chair, smiling with feline delight.
Of course we can lie. We find lying to be an art. And we lied when we told those ancient mortals that we couldn't speak an untruth. How else would we get them to trust us and do our bidding?
My mouth became a thin, tight line. He was telling the truth, because if he was lying, the logic of it made my head spin.
Iron, I managed to say. Doesn't do us a lick of harm, only ash, as you well know.
My face warmed. I'd taken everything they said as truth. Perhaps the Suriel had been lying today, too, with that long-winded explanation about the politics of the fairy realms, about staying with the High Lord and everything being fixed in the end.
I looked to Tamlin. High Lord, that wasn't a lie. I could feel its truth in my bones. Even though he didn't act like the High Lords of legend who had sacrificed virgins and slaughtered humans at will. No. Tamlin was exactly as those fanatic, calf-eyed children of the Blessed had depicted the bounties and comforts of Prithian.
Even though Lucian revealed some of our closely guarded secrets, Tamlin said, throwing the last word at his companion with a growl, we've never used your misinformation against you.
His gaze met mine.
We never willingly lied to you.
I managed a nod and took a long sip of water. I ate in silence, so busy trying to decipher every word I'd overheard since arriving that I didn't realize when Lucian excused himself before dessert. I was left alone with the most dangerous being I'd ever encountered. The walls of the room pressed in on me.
Are you feeling better?
Though he had his chin propped on a fist, concern, and perhaps surprise at that concern, shone in his eyes. I swallowed hard. If I never encounter a Naga again, I'll consider myself fortunate.
What were you doing out in the Western woods?
Truth or lie, lie or truth, both. I heard a legend once about a creature who answers your questions if you can catch it. Tamlin flinched as his claws shot out, slicing his face. But the wounds closed as soon as they opened, leaving only a smear of blood running down his golden skin, which he wiped away with the back of his sleeve.
You went to catch the Suriel.
I caught the Suriel, I corrected.
And did it tell you what you wanted to know?
I wasn't sure he was breathing. We were interrupted by the Naga before it could tell me anything worthwhile. His mouth tightened.
I'd start shouting, but I think today was punishment enough.
He shook his head.
You actually snared a Suriel, a human girl.
Despite myself, despite the afternoon, my lips twitched upward. Is it supposed to be hard? He chuckled, then fished something out of his pocket.
Well, if I'm lucky, I won't have to trap the Suriel to learn what this is about.
He lifted my crumpled list of words. My heart dropped to my stomach. I couldn't think of a suitable lie. Everything was absurd.
Unusual, Q, slaying, conflagration.
He read the list. I wanted to curl up and die. Words I couldn't recognize from the books. Words that now seemed so simple, so absurdly easy as he was saying them aloud.
Is this a poem about murdering me and then burning my body?
My throat closed up and I had to clench my hands into fists to keep from hiding my face behind them. Good night, I said. Barely more than a whisper. And stood on shaking knees. I was nearly to the door when he spoke again.
You love them very much, don't you?
I half turned to him. His green eyes met mine as he rose from his chair to walk to me. He stopped a respectable distance away. The list of malformed words was still clutched in his hand.
I wonder if your family realizes it, he murmured. That everything you've done wasn't about that promise to your mother, or for your sake, but for theirs.
I said nothing, not trusting my voice to keep my shame hidden.
I know. I know that when I said it earlier, it didn't come out well. But I could help you write.
Leave me alone, I said. I was almost through the door when I ran into someone, into him. I stumbled back a step. I'd forgotten how fast he was.
I'm not insulting you.
His quiet voice made it all the worse. I don't need your help.
Clearly not, he said with a half smile.
But the smile faded.
A human who can take down a fairy in a wolf's skin. Who ensnared the Suriel and killed two Naga on her own.
He choked on a laugh and shook his head. The firelight danced along his mask.
They're fools. Fools for not seeing it.
He winced, but his eyes held no mischief.
Here,
he said, extending the list of words. I shoved it into my pocket. I turned, but he gently grabbed my arm.
You gave up so much for them.
He lifted his other hand as if to brush my cheek. I braced myself for the touch, but he lowered it before making contact.
Do you even know how to laugh?
I shook off his arm, unable to stop the angry words.
High Lord be damned.
I don't want your pity.
His jade eyes were so bright I couldn't look away.
What about a friend?
Can fairies be friends with mortals?
500 years ago, enough fairies were friends with mortals that they went to war on their behalf.
What? I'd never heard that before, and it hadn't been in that mural in the study.
How do you think the human armies survived as long as they did, and did such damage that my kind even came to agree to a treaty? With ash weapons alone? There were fairies who fought and died at the human side for their freedom, and who mourned when the only solution was to separate our peoples.
Were you one of them?
I was a child at the time, too young to understand what was happening, or even be told, he said.
A child, which meant he had to be over.
But had I been old enough, I would have. Against slavery, against tyranny, I would gladly go to my death, no matter whose freedom I was defending.
I wasn't sure if I would do the same. My priority would be to protect my family, and I would have picked whatever side could keep them safest. I hadn't thought of it as a weakness until now.
For what it's worth,
Tamlin said,
your family knows you're safe. They have no memory of a beast bursting into their cottage, and think a long-lost, very wealthy aunt called you away to aid her on her deathbed. They know you're alive and fed and cared for. But they also know that there have been rumors of a threat in Prithian, and are prepared to run should any of the warning signs about the wall faltering occur.
You altered their memories?
I took a step back.
Fairy arrogance. Such fairy arrogance to change our minds, to implant thoughts as if it wasn't a violation.
Glamored their memories. Like putting a veil over them. I was afraid your father might come after you, or persuade some villagers to cross the wall with him and further violate the treaty.
And they all would have died anyway, once they ran into things like the Puka or the Bog or the Naga. A silence blanketed my mind until I was so exhausted I could barely think, and couldn't stop myself from saying, "You don't know him. My father wouldn't have bothered to do either." Tamlin looked at me for a long moment.
Yes, he would have.
But he wouldn't. Not with that twisted knee. Not with it as an excuse. I'd realized that the moment the Puka's illusion had been ripped away.
Fed, comfortable, and safe. They'd even been warned about the blight, whether they understood that warning or not. His eyes were open, honest. He had gone farther than I would have ever guessed toward assuaging my every concern. You truly warned them about the possible threat? A grave nod.
Not an outright warning, but it's woven into the glamour on their memories, along with an order to run at the first sign of something being amiss.
Fairy arrogance, but he had done more than I could. My family might have ignored my letter entirely. Had I known he possessed those abilities, I might have even asked the High Lord to glamour their memories if he hadn't done it himself. I truly had nothing to fret about, save for the fact that they'd probably forget me sooner than expected. I couldn't entirely blame them. My vow fulfilled, my task complete. What was left for me? The firelight danced on his mask, warming the gold, setting the emeralds glinting. Such color and variation, colors I didn't know the names of, colors I wanted to catalog and weave together. Colors I had no reason not to explore now. Paint, I said, barely more than a breath.
He cocked his head and I swallowed, squaring my shoulders. If it's not too much to ask, I'd like some paint and brushes. Tamlin blinked.
You like art? You like to paint?
His stumbling words weren't unkind. It was enough for me to say, yes, I'm not any good, but if it's not too much trouble, I'll paint outside so I don't make a mess, but...
Outside, inside, on the roof, paint wherever you want, I don't care, he said. But if you need paint and brushes, you'll also need paper and canvas.
I can work. Help around the kitchen or in the gardens to pay for it.
You'd be more of a hindrance. It might take a few days to track them down, but the paint, the brushes, the canvas, and the space are yours. Work wherever you want. This house is too clean anyway.
Thank you. I mean it, truly. Thank you.
Of course.
I turned, but he spoke again.
Have you seen the gallery?
I blurted. There's a gallery in this house? He grinned. Actually grinned, the High Lord of the Spring Court.
I had it closed off when I inherited this place.
When he inherited a title, he seemed to have little joy in holding.
It seemed like a waste of time to have the servants keep it cleaned.
Of course it would, to a trained warrior. He went on.
I'm busy tomorrow, and the gallery needs to be cleaned up, so the next day. Let me show it to you the next day.
He rubbed at his neck, faint color creeping into those cheeks of his, more alive and warm than I'd yet seen them.
Please, it would be my pleasure.
And I believed him that it would. I nodded dumbly. If the paintings along the halls were exquisite, then the ones selected for the gallery had to be beyond my human imaginings. I would like that very much. He smiled at me still, broadly and without restraint or hesitation. Isaac had never smiled at me like that. Isaac had never made my breath catch, just a little bit. The feeling was startling enough that I walked out, grasping the crumpled paper in my pocket, as if doing so could somehow keep that answering smile from tugging on my lips. Chapter 17. I jerked awake in the middle of the night, panting. My dreams had been filled with the clicking of the Suriel's bone fingers, the grinning Naga, and the pale, faceless woman dragging her blood-red nails across my throat, splitting me open bit by bit. She kept asking for my name, but every time I tried to speak, my blood bubbled out of the shallow wounds on my neck, choking me. I ran my hands through my sweat-damp hair. As my panting eased, a different sound filled the air, creeping in from the front hall through the crack beneath the door. Shouts and someone's screams. I was out of my bed in a heartbeat. The shouts weren't aggressive, but rather commanding, organizing. But the screaming... Every hair on my body stood upright as I flung open the door. I might have stayed and cowered, but I'd heard screams like that before, in the forest at home, when I didn't make a clean kill and the animals suffered. I couldn't stand it, and I had to know. I reached the top of the grand staircase in time to see the front doors of the manor bang open and Tamlin rush in, a screaming fairy slung over his shoulder. The fairy was almost as big as Tamlin, and yet the High Lord carried him as if he were no more than a sack of grain. Another species of the lesser fairies, with his blue skin, gangly limbs, pointed ears, and long onyx hair. But even from atop the stairs, I could see the blood gushing down the fairy's back. Blood from the black stumps protruding from his shoulder blades.
blood that now soaked into Tamlin's green tunic in deep, shining splotches. One of the knives from his baldric was missing. Lucian rushed into the foyer below, just as Tamlin shouted, "The table, clear it off!" Lucian shoved the vase of flowers off the long table in the center of the hall. Either Tamlin wasn't thinking straight, or he'd been afraid to waste the extra minutes before bringing the fairy to the infirmary. Shattering glass set my feet moving, and I was halfway down the stairs before Tamlin eased the shrieking fairy face first onto the table. The fairy wasn't wearing a mask. There was nothing to hide the agony contorting his long, unearthly features.
"Scouts found him dumped just over the borderline," Tamlin explained to Lucian,
but his eyes darted to me. They flashed with warning, but I took another step down.
He said to Lucian, "He's summer court."
"By the cauldron," Lucian said, surveying the damage.
"My wings,"
the fairy choked out, his glossy black eyes wide and staring at nothing.
"She took my wings."
Again, that nameless she who haunted their lives. If she wasn't ruling the spring court, then perhaps she ruled another. Tamlin flicked a hand, and steaming water and bandages just appeared on the table. My mouth dried up, but I reached the bottom of the stairs and kept walking toward the table and the death that was surely hovering in this hall.
"She took my wings," said the fairy. "She took my wings," he repeated,
clutching the edge of the table with spindly blue fingers. Tamlin murmured a soft, wordless sound, gentle in a way I hadn't heard before, and picked up a rag to dunk in the water. I took up a spot across the table from Tamlin, and the breath whooshed from my chest as I beheld the damage. Whoever she was, she hadn't just taken his wings. She'd ripped them off. Blood oozed from the black, velvety stumps on the fairy's back. The wounds were jagged, cartilage and tissue severed in what looked like uneven cuts, as if she'd sawed off his wings bit by bit.
"She took my wings," the fairy said again, his voice breaking.
As he trembled, shock taking over, his skin shimmered with veins of pure gold, iridescent, like a blue butterfly.
"Keep still," Tamlin ordered, wringing the rag. "You'll bleed out faster." "No,"
the fairy started, and began to twist onto his back, away from Tamlin, from the pain that was surely coming when that rag touched those raw stumps. It was instinct, or mercy, or desperation, perhaps, to grab the fairy's upper arms and shove him down again, pinning him to the table as gently as I could. He thrashed, strong enough that I had to concentrate solely on holding him. His skin was velvet smooth and slippery, a texture I would never be able to paint. Not even if I had eternity to master it. But I pushed against him, gritting my teeth and willing him to stop. I looked to Lucian, but the color had blanched from his face, leaving a sickly white green in its wake.
"Lucian," Tamlin said,
a quiet command. But Lucian kept gaping at the fairy's ruined back, at the stumps, his metal eye narrowing and widening. He backed up a step, and another, and then vomited in a potted plant before sprinting from the room. The fairy twisted again, and I held tight, my arms shaking with the effort. His injuries must have weakened him greatly if I could keep him pinned. "Please," I breathed. "Please hold still."
"She took my wings," the fairy sobbed. "She took them."
"I know," I murmured, my fingers aching. "I know." Tamlin touched the rag to one of the stumps, and the fairy screamed so loudly that my senses guttered, sending me staggering back.
He tried to rise, but his arms buckled, and he collapsed face first onto the table again. Blood gushed, so fast and bright that it took me a heartbeat to realize that a wound like this required a tourniquet, and that the fairy had lost far too much blood for it to even make a difference. It poured down his back and onto the table, where it ran to the edge and drip, drip, dripped to the floor near my feet. I found Tamlin's eyes on me.
"The wounds aren't clotting," he said under his breath as the fairy panted.
"Can't you use your magic?" I asked, wishing I could rip that mask off his face and see his full expression.
Tamlin swallowed hard. "No, not for major damage. Once, but not any longer."
The fairy on the table whimpered, his panting slowing.
"She took my wings," he whispered.
Tamlin's green eyes flickered, and I knew right then that the fairy was going to die. Death wasn't just hovering in this hall. It was counting down the fairy's remaining heartbeats. I took one of the fairy's hands in mine. The skin there was almost leathery, and perhaps more out of reflex than anything, his long fingers wrapped around mine, covering them completely.
"She took my wings," he said again,
his shaking subsiding a bit. I brushed the long damp hair from the fairy's half-turned face, revealing a pointed nose and a mouth full of sharp teeth. His dark eyes shifted to mine, beseeching, pleading.
"It will be all right,"
I said, and hoped he couldn't smell lies the way the Suriel was able to. I stroked his limp hair, its texture like liquid night, another I would never be able to paint, but would try to, perhaps forever.
"It will be all right."
The fairy closed his eyes, and I tightened my grip on his hand. Something wet touched my feet, and I didn't need to look down to see that his blood had pooled around me.
"My wings,"
the fairy whispered.
"You'll get them back."
The fairy struggled to open his eyes.
"You swear?"
"Yes," I breathed. The fairy managed a slight smile and closed his eyes again. My mouth trembled. I wished for something else to say, something more to offer him than my empty promises. The first false vow I'd ever sworn. But Tamlin began speaking, and I glanced up to see him take the fairy's other hand.
"Cauldron save you," he said,
reciting the words of a prayer that was probably older than the mortal realm.
"Mother hold you. Pass through the gates and smell that immortal land of milk and honey. Fear no evil. Feel no pain."
Tamlin's voice wavered, but he finished.
"Go and enter eternity."
The fairy heaved one final sigh, and his hand went limp in mine. I didn't let go, though, and kept stroking his hair, even when Tamlin released him and took a few steps from the table. I could feel Tamlin's eyes on me, but I wouldn't let go. I didn't know how long it took for a soul to fade from the body. I stood in the puddle of blood until it grew cold, holding the fairy's spindly hand and stroking his hair, wondering if he knew I'd lied when I'd sworn he would get his wings back, wondering if, wherever he had now gone, he had gotten them back. A clock chimed somewhere in the house, and Tamlin gripped my shoulder. I hadn't realized how cold I'd become until the heat of his hand warmed me through my nightgown.
"He's gone. Let him go."
I studied the fairy's face, so unearthly, so inhuman. Who could be so cruel to hurt him like that?
Feyre,
Tamlin said, squeezing my shoulder. I brushed the fairy's hair behind his long pointed ear, wishing I'd known his name, and let go. Tamlin led me up the stairs, neither of us caring about the bloody footprints I left behind or the freezing blood soaking the front of my nightgown. I paused at the top of the steps, though, twisting out of his grip and gazed at the table in the foyer below. We can't leave him there, I said, making to step down. Tamlin caught my elbow.
I know, he said, the words so drained and weary. I was going to walk you upstairs first.
Before he buried him.
I want to go with you.
It's too deadly at night for you to-
I can hold my-
No,
he said, his green eyes flashing. I straightened, but he sighed, his shoulders curving inward.
I must do this. Alone.
His head was bowed. No claws, no fangs. There was nothing to be done against this enemy, this fate. No one for him to fight. So I nodded, because I would have wanted to do it alone too, and turned toward my bedroom. Tamlin remained at the top of the stairs.
Feyre, he said,
softly enough that I faced him again.
Why?
He tilted his head to the side.
You dislike our kind on a good day. And after Andras.
Even in the darkened hallway, his usually bright eyes were shadowed.
So why?
I took a step closer to him, my blood-covered feet sticking to the rug. I glanced down the stairs to where I could still see the prone form of the fairy and the stumps of his wings. Because I wouldn't want to die alone, I said, and my voice wobbled as I looked at Tamlin again, forcing myself to meet his stare. Because I'd want someone to hold my hand until the end, and a while after that. That's something everyone deserves, human or fairy. I swallowed hard, my throat painfully tight. I regret what I did to Andras, I said, the words so strangled they were no more than a whisper. I regret that there was such hate in my heart. I wish I could undo it, and I'm sorry. So very sorry. I couldn't remember the last time, if ever, I'd spoken to anyone like that. But he just nodded and turned away, and I wondered if I should say more, if I should kneel and beg for his forgiveness. If he felt such grief, such guilt over a stranger, then Andras. By the time I opened my mouth, he was already down the steps. I watched him. Watched every movement he made, the muscles of his body visible through that blood-soaked tunic. Watched that invisible weight bearing down on his shoulders. He didn't look at me as he scooped up the broken body and carried it to the garden doors beyond my line of sight. I went to the window at the top of the stairs, watching as Tamlin carried the fairy through the moonlit garden and into the rolling fields beyond. He never once glanced back. Chapter 18. The next day, the blood of the fairy had been cleaned up by the time I ate, washed, and dressed. I'd taken my time in the morning, and it was nearly noon as I stood atop the staircase, peering down at the entry hall below, just to make sure it was gone. I'd been set on finding Tamlin and explaining, truly explaining how sorry I was about Andras. If I was supposed to stay here, stay with him, then I could at least attempt to repair what I'd ruined. a glance to the large window behind me, the view so sweeping that I could see all the way to the reflecting pool beyond the garden.